This is Studio 809.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Outdoors with Hiking Bob podcast. I'm your host, Hiking Bob Falcone. You can find me on my website at hikingbob.com, which has links to my social media, my columns at the Colorado Springs Independent, all the other podcasts I've done, my photography website, and also you can send me an email or a suggestion if you have somebody or a topic you'd like to see discussed on this podcast. Please do that at hikingbob.com. And you could also support the podcast at Patreon, patreon.com/hikingbob. Today, my guest is, and you've probably seen him on TV, you've read his books, seen him on YouTube, is Creek Stewart, a survival expert, I guess the best way to describe Creek. He's written a number of books, and his most recent one is Disaster Survival 101, The Essential Guide to Preparing for and Surviving Any Emergency Scenario. Creek, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
It is an honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss something that I have a passion for.
I've seen your TV show. I've seen your numerous appearances on all over YouTube. I mean, if you just Google in Creek Stewart, there's a lot of stuff out there. Some are short, some are long. Great stuff out there. You've written a lot of stuff about surviving in the outdoors, but this is more about surviving just, I guess the best to say, in your home. If there's a natural disaster, yeah. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, in the event of a small or large scale disaster, whether you have to stay at home and hunker down or potentially evacuate, either one. So, you know, my background is in wilderness survival, which is more aligned with what you really love to talk about. So I can certainly talk the wilderness survival talk. But when it comes to disaster survival, we all have the same needs, whether in the woods or at home. And so a big part of my career over the past 10 years, I guess, has been in the disaster survival side of things. And a lot of people are thinking about disasters these days. They seem to be happening all the time. And so it's a pretty topical book that's just been released.
We've just experienced in California tremendous wildfires. We're not a stranger to them here.
Right.
In Colorado, obviously, fortunately, it's been a while since we've had anything major, but we're not immune to those here in Colorado. We have blizzards. I mean, we're coming up on March, which is going to be typically our snowiest month of the year. Believe it or not, people think it's like December and January.
Right.
Typically March, you know, when we have a lot of snow, heavy, wet snow. So I survival is something that I think everybody should think of, but a lot of people, I don't know, they when they hear survival, they think doomsday kind of stuff.
Right.
And that, I think, puts people off. But I think this book is a little different. It's when I read it, it's pretty much common sense stuff. Is that a good way to put it?
It is. And that's exactly how I've written this material, because television shows, even though I host television shows myself, they have given preparedness a bad name. You know, they have given it a bad connotation. And the fact of the matter is these are topics that people should be talking about at their dinner table on a regular basis. They are, if you are not discussing disaster preparedness with your loved ones and your family, then quite frankly, it's irresponsible in today's world. The disaster simply, I always say the next disaster is next week. And they are indiscriminate where they happen. It doesn't matter where you live or how much money you make or what race you are or religion. They just happen everywhere. And you just never know what's coming. And so these are conversations I believe that the average person should be having and unashamed to have them, right? At the dinner table. And so I try to, in this book, really make these conversations simple. I learned a long time ago that the more complex and the more expensive something is to implement, the least likely someone is to do it. And so I've made these disaster preparedness conversations and strategies really simple and really inexpensive, in hopes that by implementing just a few of them, that someone can move the needle of preparedness for their household in a big way.
Great. So how unprepared would you say is the typical American household? If You know, we've all endured power outages of a few hours, and everybody grumbles, but we get through it. But
yeah,
in the event like the power goes out, the grid goes down, for example, which could happen. Anything could happen.
Sure.
We worry about cyber attacks and knocking out the grid. And I don't want to, you know, I'm trying not to sound like the tinfoil hat clan, you know,
yeah.
and stuff like that. But
well,
things could happen.
All of those things do happen on a regular basis. Maybe it hasn't happened to the entire country at the same time, but in isolated instances, everything you've just said happens on a regular basis, whether it's a cyber attack or whether it's a, you know, a grid down scenario in the Northeast. It's very common for, especially in the winter, for snowstorms to knock out electricity for days or even weeks. And so these things are not uncommon at all. And I would say that the average American household is not prepared very well at all to deal with any of the above natural disasters, any of the, well, at least 23 top natural disasters that I discuss in the book. You know, there's a funny saying within the survival community that, you know, America is 9 meals away from anarchy, meaning that on average, most American homes have about 9 meals in their house at any given moment. And if the food supply chain would be interrupted by a snowstorm or a grid down scenario or something worse, there could be some confusion and some craziness that happens within a 9 meal time span. But of course, food is not at the top of the list of priorities when it comes to preparedness. There's shelter, keeping regulating core body temperature. There's water, and there's fire, which also goes along with heat and cooling. And then food is actually last on the list of priorities when it comes to survival preparedness. But it's oftentimes the thing that most people think of first.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember reading this was you can go many days without food, but you cannot go very long without water. Water is actually much higher on the survival needs than food would be.
It is, whether in the wilderness or at home, in extreme conditions, we call it the three survival rules of three. In extreme conditions, you can last for 3 hours without shelter, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. And so that immediately sets the benchmarks for what comes first and maybe what you should be thinking about first when it comes to how do I begin to chip away at this mountain of preparedness for me and my family.
What do you think are, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, we don't want to be like the doomsday guy or anything like that, but
yeah.
What do you think are some of the common misconceptions people might have about being prepared for emergencies? That we watch those TV shows, and of course they're extreme, not yours necessarily, but others.
Yeah.
And they're picturing people with an underground bunker stocked with all the grain they could find and stuff like that. I guess we don't need that, but what do you think are the common misconceptions people have about being ready?
Well, I think that, you know, what you just said is a huge misconception that in order to be prepared, I need some kind of underground bunker stocked with guns, ammunition, and freeze-dried food. And that is just not the case. You know, preparedness does not have to be that complicated. It can start with a simple build of rotation of your regular food supply that you eat on a regular basis. And that's where I tell people to start. You know, if you want to get started with preparedness, start with food. It's what people think about the most anyway. And it's what drives people to raid grocery stores when they hear of a bad weather coming. And so I always recommend a really simple strategy, what's called rotation. And all that means is identifying the top 10 shelf-stable foods that you and your family eat on a regular basis. And by shelf-stable, I mean anything that has a shelf life of 6 months to a year. So we're talking pretty much all boxed food, all inner aisle foods, all pastas, all canned goods, all boxed foods, oatmeal, cereals, things like that. So identify the top 10 of those. And on each trip to the grocery store, pick up a couple extras of those top 10 foods and put them in your pantry. And as you run out of those in your kitchen, pull from your pantry. And on the next grocery store trip, grab a couple of more. And over the course of a few weeks and a few months, you will begin to develop a backstock called rotation of food that has a long shelf life that you and your family eat on a regular basis. It's not expensive. It's not going to break the bank. You don't have to build a bunker, but you will slowly build a really great preparedness supply of food that could be a couple of weeks or even up to a month of foods that could get you by in the event of a worst case scenario. And so that doesn't sound crazy at all to me.
No, that actually makes a whole lot of sense. Now that I think about it, you know, it's like, you know, all those box stuff and canned stuff. Yeah, you're going through them all the time anyway. So just get a few extra when you go there, put them in the back and just work your way back to them. You know, my wife has a plan that when we get down to the last, you know, when you take something out of the cabinet and there's one more left, it's time to go get it now, not when you actually pull the last one out.
So
you just kind of beef that up a little bit, I think, then you're actually making a little bit of a backstock there.
That's your wife already follows the basic concept of survival rotation.
She's going to love listening to this podcast.
She's one step ahead already.
She is. She certainly is. What made you decide to write this? Did you just recognize as you've done your shows that while you could teach people about being outdoors, that at home they just weren't ready? Is that what prompted you to write this?
Well, you know, the constant headlines of disasters that strike in this country every single week. And over the past 10 years, my first book in this kind of industry, I guess, was 12 years ago called Build the Perfect Bug Out Bag, which is about building an evacuation survival kit in a worst case scenario. And that's where it really all began to me. And so for a decade plus, I've had my finger on the pulse of what people are thinking about and experiencing, not only with my television shows, but with some of the books I've written. And so I've really heard a lot of incredible stories, and I get a lot of emails and a lot of questions from the general public about this subject. And they all revolve around, how do I get started? You know, like, this seems so overwhelming. I pull up YouTube, and it's like, you know, these crazy videos of digging, you know, burying my refrigerator in the field. And you know what I mean? Just crazy, you know, crazy sounding stuff that your average person in a suburb outside of a city, they're just not going to do, you know, or, you know, going off grid and filling your field full of solar panels and living a solar lifestyle. That also is not going to happen for the average American household, right? Right. And so my goal with this was to answer the questions that I get on a regular basis, which is, how do I get started? And how do I do this in a way that just makes sense for me and my family? And so that's what this book is filled with. It's filled with step-by-step instructions for how to put strategies in place for things like shelter, water, food, first aid, and all other different types of things that you might need to think, communications, building a communications team within your neighborhood so that you can share resources, because your neighbors are your first responders in disaster. Unlike many people think, the police and the fire, as you well know, are very overwhelmed in large scale disasters, and they just can't get to everyone at the same time. So time and time again, we see that neighborhood and communities are the first responders to the most vulnerable in the midst of disaster. And so that really was the motivation for this book, is to break this thing down into bite-sized chunks that are inexpensive and common sense, so that someone can just open the book, do this, turn the page, do that, turn the page at their own pace, and it make a huge difference for their family.
When I was reading the book, I was realizing that for a lot of the things that you detail in here about how to be prepared or stuff to have, I was about halfway there. It was like, I got this, but I don't have that much of it. Or maybe I just need to adjust it a little bit. So do you feel that when some people read this book, they're going to realize that they might be pretty close to accomplishing a lot of these things? Do you think that's pretty realistic? I mean, we talked that most people are not prepared more than like 9 meals, which if you think about it, is 3 days. It's not that long.
Yeah.
Do you think some people are like, I only need to up my game just a little bit to hit this?
That's right. I think that after reading a couple of chapters of this book, you know, my goal is for someone to have an aha moment of saying, you know what? I can totally do this. Like, this is not the things that I'm seeing on YouTube and what I'm watching on Nat Geo, on Doomsday Preppers. Like, this is not what it's made out to be. This is common sense. This is the stuff that my grandparents were doing before it was cool, you know? And so that's really my goal with the book, is for people to have the same experience that you had, where you're like, wait a minute, I'm already kind of doing this in some areas. I just need to fill in the gaps of, you know, maybe I need to fill in a gap here and fill in a gap there. And so I'm super encouraged to hear that you felt that way while reading it as well.
Yeah, I felt that it was like, there's so much common sense stuff in here. You know, when I got the book, I'm like, this should be interesting. And I'm reading it going, this actually is pretty interesting. This is really easy to do. Do you find in your travels, does a typical level of preparedness in a household, does it vary geographically from one part of the country to another? Do city dwellers tend to be more reliant than like those in the country, and maybe those of us here in Colorado? And I mean, I live in a big city, but you know, the wilderness is right there. You find that varies a lot, how well people are prepared from one part of the country to another?
I do, but I also definitely see patterns, you know, and in general, those who are closest to the conveniences of modern society are the least prepared and the most vulnerable. And those are typically those who live in the cities. They have the mentality that everything is right around the corner. And so they live their life in a just-in-time inventory scenario when it comes to water, electricity, fuel, food, first aid, and all of the things that we depend on a regular basis. And those who live on the outskirts, that are typically in the country or hard to reach areas, or places like Colorado, where you can, you know, where there are some real ebbs and flows to weather, you find that those people are a little more prepared, for sure. And I think that those who experience natural disasters on a regular basis that are a little predictable, like Florida, for example, that they can pretty much guarantee there's a hurricane coming through every year. Yeah. So when you're in areas that are prone to natural disasters, you find that those people are a little more prepared as well. So you do see some patterns when it comes to that. Sure.
You know, here in Colorado Springs, where I'm at, 500,000 people in the city, I'm 5 minutes away from 3 grocery stores. But if you go an hour out of town, could be 45 minutes to an hour away from a grocery store, and it takes one snowstorm to cut you off. So as I was asking the question, I'm thinking about people just live up the pass here on the other side of Pikes Peak, how they might be better prepared than their neighbors 45 minutes, an hour away. It's interesting, and it kind of makes sense, obviously, if you live in a big city and your nearest bodega is around the corner that you can go pick up supplies, you tend not to think that place might get, you know, run out of stuff. There was we had a storm come through here a couple of weeks ago, and somebody posted a picture, and I don't remember from where it was, but it was a pickup truck in a supermarket filled to the gills with bread. Well, you can't survive on bread, and B, by the time that's all going to turn to mold before you even get to, like, completely unreasonable and really not thinking about being prepared. What are you going to do with all that? It's going to go moldy before you do it. So your approach is obviously a much more reasonable one. Don't go stock up the back of your truck with nothing but bread. What are you going to do with that after,
you make you make a really great point when you say an unreasonable approach. And here's what I found. Okay, so it's really interesting because I found very difficult for people to make sound and common sense decisions in the midst of crisis. Okay, and so when you see like people rushing to the grocery store in the midst of crisis, they're just not making good sound decisions. They're making decisions based upon fear and panic, and oftentimes those are not good decisions. You know, you're basing them on a lot of emotion rather than logic, and you end up with truckloads of bread or toilet paper, right? And so the one thing I love about even simple steps of preparedness is it helps you to make good, solid decisions before a crisis so that when a crisis comes, the plans are already in place. Now it's just a matter of executing those plans that have already been thought about in advance. So you're not making decisions, you are just executing pre-made decisions. And I love that about preparedness because it solves a lot of problems when you help to eliminate or mitigate fear and panic in the midst of crisis.
You know, as you can see behind me, my career was actually as a firefighter. Did it for almost four decades.
Yeah.
And people are sometimes amazed or they comment that when, you know, something happens, we're out hiking or something and an emergency happens, that I don't get excited. And it's like, in that job, I couldn't get excited. I had to always be planning the next step. We pre-planned fires and buildings. We pre-planned how we approached a car wreck. We pre-planned everything. So even if it's a situation I've not seen before, the back of my mind is, how are we going to approach this? And I guess that's the same thing for this disaster survival, is thinking ahead of time, like you said, the stock up. Don't go buy the truckload of toilet paper and bread. Have your supply already in place. So when that happens and everybody else is losing their mind, you could sit there and be very calm and go, we got this handled. We're okay.
That's right.
That's the way I see your approach.
You're exactly right. You know, in your career as a firefighter, you were practicing and making decisions before you had to actually make those decisions. So it was already wound up in your head, you know, before the time to execute. And the same way with preparedness. And one thing that I always like to mention is because I love to drive home this point of the community, your neighbors being your first responders. And when you make some of these decisions in advance and you make some smart preparedness decisions when it comes to food and water and medicines and tools and resources to have on hand, then you also not only put yourself in a position to provide for your own family, but to really help someone else, you know, in a time when the most vulnerable are pretty much left on their own, you know, whether it's the elderly or those maybe handicapped or even families with children. Those are typically the three categories of people who are the most vulnerable. And to be able to step in the midst of crisis and help people out, I mean, man, that's what the world is all about. You know, that's to me, that's one of the most exciting parts of preparedness, is being able to help people in the midst of something bad.
Excellent. If there was one single thing, if we were to distill this down to one thing that you could tell people to say, this is the one thing you could do, and I know it's way more complicated than that, so I'm going to start off by saying this is not the only thing, but if there was one thing you could say to people to be better prepared, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to go to water.
Okay.
Because I love the topic of water, because it's not a very sexy topic, right? It's not a very exciting topic. In fact, it's really boring. But it's a really critical piece to our survival equation, whether it's in the woods or whether it's in the midst of a disaster scenario. So I like to make water really simple for people. Okay. So, and I break water down into three categories. Okay. The first category is fresh water storage. You should have at least a week of fresh water storage, 1 gallon a day for each person in your house. Okay. That can be jug water. That can be 5 gallon containers. That can be bottled water, cases of bottled water. So just do a quick calculation, 1 gallon a day for every person in your household for 1 week. Okay. That buys you a little bit of time. That doesn't solve all your problems. Water is heavy, it's bulky, and it takes up a lot of space. Okay. So the next category is you want to have a gravity fed filter. So the filter that I currently use is called Pro One. You can buy it on Amazon for, you know, $150. You pour water in the top. It goes through filters by gravity and then drips out the bottom ready to drink. You can source water from a lake or a pond or rainwater or snow. You can put it in that, or you can pour your stored water into that, and you can be pretty much guaranteed that it's safe to drink on the other side. And so having a gravity-fed filter is number two. And then lastly, you want to have a renewable water source, okay? So if you have a pond, that's a renewable water source. Another option that I really like to recommend is a rain barrel. In most parts of the country, if you have one 55-gallon rain barrel, you have solved your renewable water source problem. You can then take all the water from that rain barrel, pour it into your gravity-fed filter, and you can just, you have a renewable source of fresh drinking water, not only for drinking, cooking, but also for hygiene. So those are three really simple ways to pretty much solve your water problem in the midst of crisis, or at least get you close to 90% there. So for less than a few hundred dollars, you've solved your one of your most critical survival needs. And for most people, it's a category they haven't even considered.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. You'd be interesting to know that up until a couple of years ago, you could not have a rain barrel collecting rainwater in Colorado. But the legislators finally saw that that was kind of a dumb law that went way back to water rights and things like that, and changed it. You can now have one. So put a barrel underneath one of your rain gutters and just let it collect the water, and you solve a lot of your problems. That's one of the things I was getting at earlier, is how simple some of this stuff is. A barrel underneath your rain gutter.
That's right.
Could help you solve a whole lot, especially we've had a fair amount of snow here this year already, could help you solve a lot of your problems. So really wonderful stuff.
And I've found that rain barrel thing to be true in a lot of communities. I mean, there's definitely big portions of California that you aren't allowed to have rain barrels. And even in some homeowners associations will not let you have a rain barrel. But here's the deal. You don't, just because they don't allow you to have it doesn't mean you can't buy one and have it sitting in your garage so that you could just hook it up in the midst of crisis.
Right.
And so don't let legislation, whether it's government or homeowners association, you know, prevent you from putting something in place. Maybe you don't hook it up on a day to day, but having it, you know, as a backup plan to install in the midst of crisis, it's a really smart idea. Even though the laws are not smart, this is a really smart idea.
Right. And if nothing else, like you said, just buying a case of water every time you go out and stocking up, and having that in your basement or something, or those 5-gallon, or
the name that's right,
kind of awkward to move around. Creek, this has been great stuff. It's a pleasure to meet you, have you on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Is there any one last thing you'd like to tell everybody before we go?
Well, I tell you, the most common misconception when it comes to disaster preparedness is it's not going to happen to me. And I've learned that that is not true. If there's anything the past few years has told us in the headlines, whether it's the pandemic or whether it's the most recent fires in California, is disasters. It's not being negative. It's not being doomsday. It's not being pessimistic. Disasters are just a part of our reality. And so I always say, it's not if, but when.
Excellent. Excellent. Creek Stewart, where can people find you if they want to find your book? Again, this one is Disaster Survival 101, The Essential Guide to Preparing for and Surviving Any Emergency Scenario. A great book. Where can they find you? Where can they find your books?
Really simple. Just go to creekstewart.com. That has everything that I offer, online courses, all my books, things like that. But as far as the books go, I've written over 40 books. And so those are pretty much available anywhere books are sold. And disaster preparedness is a really hot topic right now. And so this book is flying off the shelves.
Excellent. Well, Creek, thank you so much again for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it. The information is excellent. It's doable. It's reasonable. It's common sense. I think people will be, you know, people have been kind of put off by the subject, may sit there and go, well, this isn't so bad after all. I can do this. Thank you again so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. And thank you so much for all of your service as a first responder over the years who have seen this firsthand.
I love doing every bit of it. And it was almost a shame I had to retire, but it was time to go.
So I appreciate it.
All right. With that, everybody, thank you for listening to the Outdoors Hiking Bob podcast. We'll talk to you next time.